still there. So was the luggage. It squatted on the path, watching him. Rincewind had never got on with the luggage. It had always given him the impression that it thoroughly disapproved of him. But just for once, it wasn't glaring at him. It had a rather pathetic look, like a dog that's just come home after a pleasant roll in the cowpats to find that the family has moved to the next continent. "All right," said Rincewind. "Come on." It extended its legs and followed him up the path. Somehow, Rincewind had expected the garden on the outcrop to be full of dead flowers, but it was in fact well kept, and had obviously been planted by someone with an eye for colour, always provided the colour was deep purple, night black, or shroud white. Huge lilies perfumed the air. There was a sundial with a gnome on in the middle of a freshly scythed lawn. With the luggage trailing behind him, Rincewind crept along a path of marble chippings until he was at the rear of the cottage, and pushed open a door. Four horses looked at him over the top of their nosebags. They were warm and alive, and some of the best-kept beasts Rincewind had ever seen. A big white one had a stall all to itself, and a silver and black harness hung over the door. The other three were tethered in front of a hay-rack on the opposite wall, as if visitors had just dropped by. They regarded Rincewind with vague animal curiosity. The luggage bumped into his ankle. He spun around and hissed, "Push off, you!" The luggage backed away. It looked abashed. Rincewind tiptoed to the far door and cautiously pushed it open. It gave onto a stone-flagged passageway, which in turn opened onto a wide entrance hall. He crept forward with his back pressed tightly against a wall. Behind him, the luggage rose up on tiptoes and skittered along nervously. The hall itself, well, it wasn't the fact that it was considerably bigger than the whole cottage had appeared from the outside that worried Rincewind. The way things were these days, he'd have laughed sarcastically if anyone had said you couldn't get a quart into a pint pot. And it wasn't the decor, which was early crypt and ran heavily to black drapes. It was the clock. It was very big and occupied a space between two curving wooden staircases covered with carvings of things that normal men only see after a heavy session on something illegal. It had a very long pendulum, and the pendulum swung with a slow tick-tock that set his teeth on edge, because it was the kind of deliberate, annoying ticking that wanted to make it abundantly clear that every tick and every tock was stripping another second off your life. It was the kind of sound that suggested very pointedly that in some hypothetical hourglass, somewhere, another few grains of sand had dropped out from under you. Needless to say, the weight on the pendulum was knife-edged and razor-sharp. Something tapped him in the small of the back. He turned angrily. "Look, you son of a suitcase, I told you—" It wasn't the luggage. It was a young woman, silver-haired, silver-eyed, rather taken aback.
End of CD 3.